Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new edition of Geek to Me Radio. Today we have a double dose of authors. First, we'll be talking with Julie Murphy about her new book in cooperation with Valiant Comics, Faith Taking Flight. We'll also talk about her work on the Netflix series based in the book, Dumplin'. Then we'll talk with prolific writer Peter David all about Star Trek novels, writing for comic books, and more. Stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. And if you don't know Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain.
And for those of you who are finding us out there in the interwebs, thank you very much for tuning in. If you're hearing this in the podcast form on Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud, or Podomatic, or iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast from, thanks very much for finding us there. We hope you're subscribing and listening each week. I, of course, am your host, James Enstall, bringing you a fun-filled hour of geeky goodness. We're going to dive right into our first guest. Right now, we've got New York Times bestselling author Julie Murphy talking all about a brand new book, Faith Taking Flight, based on a Valiant Comics favorite of mine, Harbinger. Julie, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks very much. I saw that this was all over Twitter. Your publicist are very good. They're talking about the book and everything. And I was very intrigued because Faith has been kind of exploded. She's got her own title with Valiant now, since they've kind of had this renaissance at Valiant. But I remember her from the original Harbinger series, which I bought off the newsstands because I'm old. So how did you get involved in the comic book world with Faith and everything else?
You know, I'm a former librarian, so I was always aware of Faith in sort of like a peripheral way, just as like developing collections and things like that at my library. But definitely when Valiant like released her own like title series is when she really came more on my radar, and I started to see more news articles pop up about her, especially around the time that like the film rights for Bloodshot sold, which is a Valiant property. And so that's when people started talking about other Valiant properties. I'm like, oh wow, there's a plus size heroine. Wouldn't it be so cool to see where her journey is going to take her, maybe even a movie someday? And so when all those little pieces started popping up right around the internet, that's when I really started getting excited about Faith.
And so how did you become attached to the project? Were you sought out for it with the success you've had in other novels? Is it something that you approached somebody? Kind of talk about the genesis of Faith Taking Flight.
Yeah, so originally Valiant approached me about taking on a YA novelization of Faith's origin story, which would, you know, take place during her high school years. And I was really hesitant to do it first because it's really unlike anything that I've ever written before. I typically write, you know, just like straight contemporary stories. As a consumer and as a like a reader and a movie watcher, I actually read a lot of different things. So it wasn't out of my wheelhouse of things that I would like, but it was out of my wheelhouse of things that I would write normally. But I was really excited to do this because I love writing about plus size main characters. It's one of the hallmarks of my work, and I really like couldn't say no to the opportunity to write a plus size superhero, especially because when I was growing up, I had, you know, no idea that anything like that could ever exist. So it was a no-brainer for me in one way, but on the other hand, it was a little bit daunting, and I was excited by the idea to kind of like stretch myself and see what new things I could bring to my craft.
And in your acknowledgments at the back of the book, you talk about Jodie Houser, Margaret Savage, mm-hmm. people who have had an indelible imprint on faith and on just comics in general. Were you able to talk with them before you started? Did you collaborate with them during the process?
I mean, thank God for their work, because I definitely leaned on it a lot as I was creating this book. But as far as like who I directly worked with, I worked with mostly the editorial team at Valiant, who really has so much knowledge of Faith and her timeline and her journey, and like what specific things in her story were just things that like had to be there, were things that, you know, were just unmovable pieces of her lifespan. I think that they were a part of my process in the sense that like they helped create this amazing sandbox that I got to play in as I was writing this book. But as far as who was really holding my hands along the way, it was definitely the editorial staff at Valiant.
And did you go back and read much of the original Valiant series, the original Harbinger series, or did you pick up with the newer stuff? How much did you consume as far as giving you the groundwork to lay the foundation on?
Yeah, I mean, if Faith was in it, I read it. But as far as the things that I revisited, it was definitely the newer stuff, mostly, that Jodie had a big hand in. And for me, it's what resonated with me the most of all the different material I read that contained Faith. I really love her, I don't want to say reimagining, but I loved her iteration of Faith. It's what really got me excited about the character. So,
and you mentioned earlier Bloodshot came out. It came out right at the time of COVID. I think it would have done so much better at the box office had we not had that problem. But obviously, Valiant wants to kind of build their own cinematic universe, and I could see several ways to go about it. So let me ask you this. Who would you cast in the role of Faith if they say, Julie, we want you to your input on who we're casting, we're going to make a Faith movie or a Harbinger movie, who would you pick?
You know, that's hard. As far as like, if this were going to be a movie based off the book that I did, like her teenage origin story, I'll be totally honest and say that I don't think that there's enough teenage plus size actors out there for me to actually give you an informed answer. Mm. I'm sure that they're out there, but they're not getting the roles that they should get right now, or they're not getting the visibility they should get. But there is this plus size actress who, for me, really embodies Faith in every way. She's only had like a few bit parts here and there, but her name is Jen Ponton. And if Faith were an actual human person, it would be Jen. She's so bubbly and effervescent, and she just has like that like glowiness about her that Faith has. I think that she would make a great Faith. There's another plus size actress named Joy Nash. She would make a great Faith. And of course, I have a huge soft spot for Danielle McDonald, who starred in Dumplin. She's my girl and a dear friend of mine. So, I mean, she's got the look for that's for sure. So I think she would make a great Faith.
And with, I read the book, and I will say, to your credit, my wife watched me. She says, I don't think I've ever seen you finish a book that quickly. It was so good.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. And thanks to your publicist, Jacqueline, for sending me over a copy. I really enjoyed the book. And I will say, I was wondering, I'm seeing some bits in the book, and I wonder, obviously, this is based on a Valiant Comics character. There obviously seem to be little bits of you thrown in there, like the fact, I think she mentions there being a fan of something without any shame of being a fan of that. And that's something you yourself have kind of articulated, especially with like the Twilight series and things.
Oh, yeah.
So what parts of you did you put in a kind of, not even necessarily consciously, but what parts of yourself do you see in Faith?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for as excited as I was about potentially doing something with Faith, I knew that I couldn't do it if I couldn't do something new and exciting and something that felt like it was written by me. So there's definitely pieces of myself sprinkled throughout. I think that, you know, I really, her fangirl energy is something I really resonate with. I wanted a new thing that is probably new to Valiant readers is that in this book, Faith is questioning her sexuality. She's not sure if she's straight or bisexual or where she lands on that spectrum. And that was something that for me, it just felt like just because it hadn't been touched upon in the comics doesn't mean it couldn't be a thing that we did in her YA books. So that was something that, you know, queer characters are a major part of my books. And so I knew that that was something I wanted to really work into her universe. So that is definitely a hallmark of mine. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of body positivity in this book. And I think that just by merely existing, Faith is body positive in and of herself without having to say anything about it. But there are definitely moments when Faith is feeling a little uncomfortable in her skin and she has to like look outwardly and she sees other plus size people around her living their everyday lives and they're beautiful and they're fulfilled. And she has like these moments where she's like, if I think so highly of this person, why can't I think highly of myself? So I think that as an adult in the comics, Faith is very confident, or at least confident presenting. And I thought it was really important for us to show how she ended up that way, because you don't just wake up one day and decide like, I'm going to walk around like I own the world. So I wanted to see how Faith got through that journey.
And there is such an important emphasis placed on representation, because people want to see themselves in media, in books, in comic books, in movies and TV. And I think that's one of the reasons, because there's such an emphasis on representation. This is the perfect time for a book like this and for Faith to be in the spotlight.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, something we say a lot in publishing is that if you can't see it, you can't be it. And so for me, growing up, I couldn't even imagine myself ever being a writer. I could never imagine myself ever being a leading lady or things like that, because I never saw it. And so for me to like want it almost felt wrong. And so now with like this like whole movement of people really putting more of themselves and you know, more of the things that make them different and unique on the page, I'm really hoping that for the next generation, it's, you know, there's no moment of questioning whether or not you can do something or be something, because there's great examples of it in literature all around us.
Absolutely. And shifting gears for a moment to talk about Dumplin', which I saw on Netflix and absolutely loved that. I sadly haven't read the book yet, but I did see the movie and I loved it. It was your second book. And for your second book to be turned into a Netflix movie, what were your feelings about that? Were you surprised? Were you shocked? Were you nervous? What was going on in your mind?
We'll take our first break, come back, and continue our conversation with author Julie Murphy. Stand by.
Hi, I'm Bex Taylor-Klaus from Voltron. I play Pidge, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We're back. Talking with Julie Murphy, got to chat with her about her new book, Faith Taking Flight. And again, if you haven't read this book, I can't recommend it highly enough. If you're a Valiant Comics fan, if you're a Faith fan, if you like the young adult genre, if you just are a fan of Julie Murphy, this book is phenomenal. And we definitely think you should get there and read it. Before we took our first break, we were chatting with her about her feelings having her second novel, Dumplin', made into a Netflix film.
I mean, to be honest, I'm still shocked. I leave the Dumplin' movie in my to watch list at all times on my Netflix, just so that when I log in every time, I can be reminded that this is a thing that happened. Isn't that wild? So I still am just completely shocked that it even happened. We were really lucky with how it all happened, and that the movie was actually filmed as an independent film, and then we sold it to Netflix after the fact. Mm-hmm. So we really got to make the movie exactly what we wanted to make. Not that the people at Netflix are great, and I'm sure they would have let us do exactly what we wanted to do, but you know, it was really like the producers and myself and the director in the driver's seat. There was no studio behind us kind of whispering in our ear, which was really an incredible thing.
So obviously you wrote the book on which this is based, and the screenplay was done by Kristen Hahn. Did you have any say as far as casting? What kind of, do you not like to be hands-on in that kind of a situation? What was your dealing with or interaction with the movie production itself?
You know, I definitely was involved with the production. As far as casting went, it was something that they sort of would bring their options to me or their decision to me. And if I had something to say, or if I had a real legitimate reason for why something shouldn't happen or why we should go a different direction, it was something that I would bring up and talk through it. And sometimes there would be a change, and sometimes I would be the person who had to deal with a change. So it was really like a push and pull. It was much more of a communal experience than writing a book is, which was something to adjust to for sure. Yeah. But you know, Kristen Hahn and I, have been in this for a long time together. Not to go into a huge long story, but the film rights were originally sold to Disney, and Kristen Hahn was originally hired by Disney. So she and I had gone through quite a bit together to make this movie happen. Because obviously it was eventually made independently and then bought by Netflix. And so there was a lot going on behind the scenes. So our relationship was really forged in the fire. So we're, you know, I felt really comfortable going and talking to her, and I got to read every script and give notes on everything. So I was as involved as I felt comfortable with, really, you know.
And when you wrote the book, did you have any idea in your head that Jennifer Aniston would be playing Rosie? When you was she someone you pictured for that?
I had no clue. I mean, I really don't picture famous people as I'm writing my books. I mostly picture people that I come across in my everyday life. So it's still shocking to me that Jennifer was involved in it. But Jennifer was someone who came on to the project after we found out that Disney wasn't going to be making the movie. And so she's really kind of, I mean, I always say that our fairy godmothers for this movie are Jen and Dolly Parton. And I mean, really the third fairy godmother is Dolly Parton's manager, Danny Nozell. He's really kind of who was pulling the strings behind the Dolly Parton machine. So he really helped us get our wings for sure.
And we've had Bex Taylor Klaus on the show before.
I love Bex.
Huge fans of Bex. And they said that working on this project was one of the highlights. Actually, we had them on the winter it came out. I think that December, shortly after it debuted on Netflix, and they couldn't say enough good things about working on Dumplin'.
Yeah, I Bex was definitely like, there are certain people that like set a tone when they walk into a room and set a mood, and Bex is one of those people. They really just shine and make everyone feel like they're the most important person in the room, which is an incredible gift. And I mean, I wish I could just find reasons to work with them over and over again. We've definitely stayed in touch since Dumplin', and I'm just really happy to be a part of their life.
So with Faith Taking Flight now out, and again, if you're listening right now, you can find it on Audible or Google Play Books, or we always, always, always recommend you support your local bookstore. Go find a copy there if you're able to do so. This, I guess, would have been, had not for COVID, a good time to go to some comic cons and maybe some of the Valley people. And was that in the plans before COVID took over?
Yeah, you know, we were really lucky to be able to go to New York Comic Con last fall and announce the book. So I'll take that as my Comic Con experience. It was really fun and incredible. But yeah, that was definitely something we were all looking forward to, was making the rounds and planning a big old book tour and, you know, visiting different cities and then, you know, obviously getting to go to like the biggest show of them all. But that didn't work out for us this year.
Well, someone who attends cons, I try to do about six a year, and I love the energy, the vibe. I love meeting the artists and writers. So hopefully 2021 will have some kind of a vaccine for this, or things will be better, and we can, because I would love, now that I've got this book, I would love to have you sign it and meet you in person.
Yeah, I would love that too. Well, we've got a second Faith book coming next year, so who knows? Maybe we'll get to meet again for that one.
And besides that, do you have any other projects on which you're working currently? I know, obviously, with everyone in quarantine, I talked to some authors and writers, and they said this is a great time to be quarantined, because what else are they going to do but write?
I mean, it's really true. I actually had already had myself scheduled to write three books this year, so I have a lot in the pipeline right now. I've got the third and final Dumplin' book. There's actually a book that comes after Dumplin' called Put In that follows some other girls and that group of friends. And then we've got the third and final Dumplin' book will come out in, I think, May or June of next year. It's called Pumpkin. And basically everyone goes to prom.
And with you said there is a sequel in the work to Faith. Could this turn into a series? Is it up to kind of Valiant? They want to see where the numbers go in the books, or is there a plan for other characters you might want to write?
I think that, I mean, I think if I worked with Valiant, I would always want to come back to Faith. I don't know if we're going to have any more books in the works at the moment, but I do know that I would never say never, and I'm always open to it. I think that we'll just see. Fortunately, I have a lot of work lined up, but also, unfortunately, it makes it a little difficult to squeeze in new projects. So sure. This Faith book was probably like 2 to 3 years in the making.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I would love to, but I think that it would just come down to scheduling and demand. So we'll see.
And again, Faith Taking Flight was available as of July 7th, so you can get it online and support your local bookstore. Grab it there. I loved all the references because I'm a huge Buffy fan. And I love Harry Potter, and apparently I share all those traits with Faith, and I know you're a Twilight fan, so are those things you also are into those fandoms?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think like a lot of Harry Potter fans have been a little disappointed in J.K. Rowling lately, but you know, it's still something that I hold near and dear, and I really love, of course, Buffy. I'm a huge Buffy fan. I think one of the funnest parts of this whole book was getting to create this sort of fictionalized version of a TV show that Faith could obsess over. So I got to create this Faith TV show called The Grove that she is just like, you know, head over heels for. And I always like to think of it as like my version of like Riverdale meets X-Men meets Degrassi. So a little dream come true for Julie, I guess.
And I will say, I was kind of in my head, I'm not sure if you share this, but I was kind of picturing Ruby Rose for the part of Dakota Ash. I don't know if that was just me, because I've been binging Batwoman or what, but I thought that'd be a great fit.
Oh, I could totally see a teenage Ruby Rose in that part.
Well, this has been a delight to speak with you. I loved the book, Faith Taking Flight, out from, it's from Bowser and, I just wrote it down here somewhere.
Bowser and Bray.
Bowser and Bray, which is an imprint of HarperCollins. Thank you very, very much for your time. And
thank you.
I want to mention that we will be able to keep up with you at And I'm Julie on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, your website,
yes.
imjuliemurphy.com.
Yep, that sounds great.
Perfect. Julie Murphy, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you. You too.
I want to make sure to tell you about our premier sponsor, the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. We're in the midst of summer. This year, COVID has made this year fly by somehow, even though we've been all locked down and quarantined. I still look at the calendar and have to remember it's not April, it's not May, this is July. We're halfway through July, friends. And coming right around the corner is Halloween. A great place to spend Halloween is Greater St. Charles, right there in the heart on Main Street. Legends and Lanterns comes back. I think this is their sixth, maybe their fifth or sixth year doing this festival. If you like their sister festival, Christmas Traditions, but you're a Halloween fan, this is something you cannot miss. All the living legends of history, from Baron Samedi, Igor from the Frankenstein novels, you have the Phantom of the Opera, Lizzie Borden is out there, Abigail Williams. You'll get to meet and interact with all these people. It's a great time. It is child friendly. So when I say Halloween, think merry, not scary. Bring the family down. This is a great opportunity for the whole family to come out and experience some Halloween fun. You can learn about it on their website, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. Check them out. Get all the information there, all the things there are to see and do. If you're coming in from out of town, if you want to learn more about the other festivals, other things they have going on throughout the year, this is your resource right here, the website, discoverstcharles.com. As we say here at Geek to Me Radio, you will have an historically good time. We're going to take our next break, come right back, and we'll start chatting with author Peter David. So stand by.
Here I am.
Hello everyone, this is Paul Soles, the voice of Spider-Man and Ermie the Misfit Elf, wanted to be a dentist on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Coming to you on Geek to Me Radio, hope you enjoy, talk with you soon.
Here comes the Spider-Man.
And we're back. Thanks again to Julie Murphy for chatting with us for the first half of the hour about her book, Faith Taking Flight. And we're now going to talk to our next guest.
We're talking with prolific writer Peter David. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing well. As I mentioned the other day when I passed by, your run on Hulk, a 12-year run, so it's hard not to call it definitive. But at the time, I love the story. It was not a good book as far as sales-wise. and you were pretty much given carte blanche to kind of make it your own.
No, but the only reason I wound up writing the book was that literally nobody else wanted to do it. At the time, I was the assistant direct sales manager. And because of that, I was considered persona non grata by editorial. Indeed, I'd been fired off of Spectacular Spider-Man because Jim Owsley was trying to save his job, which, you know, I totally understand. And Bob Harris walked into my office and asked if I'd be interested in writing a Hulk. And I said to him very candidly, aren't you concerned about getting blowback from other people in editorial? And he said, no, nobody else wants to write it. I said, what do you mean nobody else? He says, I have spoken to every available writer and every available editor. No one wants to write this book.
Hmm.
So no one is going to object if you're writing it because no one else is interested in it. So, yeah, I was pretty much given carte blanche to do whatever the hell I wanted.
So I know the whole idea of dealing with Banner's psyche and everything like that, the idea of turning him back to gray, was that you as well?
No, it was not. I very frequently get credited for that because I did so much with the character. But no, he was turned to gray by Al Milgram. Let's keep in mind that he was actually gray original.
Exactly, yes.
If you find an original copy of Incredible Hulk number one, he's gray throughout. Subsequent reprintings made him green to be consistent. But no, Al Milgram was the one who turned him gray. I've always been very, very clear about that.
And having all the stuff you did, you worked with so many artists who really helped propel the book. Are you surprised, looking back, were you expecting it to take off like it did?
I had no expectations of sales. My job was to get in there and turn out a publishable comic every month that would ideally entertain as many people as possible. Did I keep an eye on the sales? Of course I did. I worked in the sales department. I kept an eye on its sales, and I kept an eye on Avengers sales, and I kept an eye on Indiana Jones sales. I mean, keeping an eye on sales was part of my job. So, the fortunate thing is that I was hyper aware of sales. So it gave me a first look. And if sales started to drop off, I would say, okay, it's time for me to do something different. And that would happen like every 4 years or so. So if you go through my run, you'll see that every 4 years, there was some sort of major change to the Hulk's persona or situation. That came as a result of me saying, okay, I need to do something to goose reader interest.
Did you plan on spending 12 years on the book, or did it just happen that you were just settled in, everyone like kind of left you alone because it like did really well? And
pretty much right, yes.
So when you were working on the Hulk, we talked about you were given it when it's very low, you were given carte blanche. Did you take that as kind of a dare or a challenge that I'm going to make this the best book? Obviously, as a writer, you want it to be good. But
No, my ambition is always to make the best book, make a book as good as I can. But you know, I was just thinking I want to increase sales because I don't want them to cancel the book, which you're not going to do. It's the Hulk. But nevertheless, I felt that I was being given a chance here, and I wanted to prove that giving me a chance was the right move.
Other stuff you've written for, X Factor was a great run. You got to take over for the new team on the book.
Yes.
When you're given a task like that, you're starting from scratch, basically. How is that a good way to do it, or you kind of like to go in with established characters and play with them?
Well, when I was first offered X Factor, I thought, oh my God, this is great. I'm going to get to write the original X-Men. And they said, no. we're changing the lineup. And I said, okay, who's going to be in the lineup? And they said, Havoc. I'm going, Havoc? Okay, well, he's a brother of Cyclops. That's not bad. Polaris? Okay. Guido, I'm going, who the hell is Guido? Who in the hell is Guido? And they said he's Lila Cheney's bodyguard. I'm going, oh, that sounds promising. Wolfsbane, which that I was happy about because I actually named her Wolfsbane.
Hmm.
I was actually in Louise Simonson's office. I think it was Louise Simonson. And Chris Claremont was trying to come up with a name for this character. We knew she was going to be called Rain Sinclair, but he needed a superhero identity. And I was standing there while he was describing her, and I piped up, you know, if turning into a bane, turning into a wolf is the bane of her existence, why don't you call her Wolfsbane? And they went, yeah, okay, that totally works, and that's how she became Wolfsbane. So I was fine with that. And they said, and they're going to be working for the government. I'm going, Jesus Christ. Oh, and Quicksilver. And Quicksilver was going to be in there. But I said, okay, I can do something with this lineup. And I wound up doing it. And fans seemed to love what I did.
And talking about all the other stuff you've written in so many mediums. You've written not just comic books, which we've talked about now, but also like shows, Young Justice. You've got scripts here and everything like that. You've done full novels. Is there a type of writing that you find most satisfying?
Probably books, because it's the purest form of storytelling, short of sitting on a rock and telling stories to passersby. When you're doing a TV show, you're dependent upon actors, directors, musicians, all these people to bring it to life. When you're writing a comic book, you're depending upon the artist not to screw it up. I've written terrific stories that were butchered by artists. Mm. When it's a book, it's you and the words, and that's it. Assuming that it's typeset properly, there's nothing else. So it is the most satisfying in terms of delivering your visions to the readers. On the other hand, you know, you put out books and you get thousands of readers. You put out a TV show and you get millions of viewers.
Sure.
Same thing with successful feature films. So you can really get your name and your stories out there to a vast degree. So there is that advantage.
And talking about the novels you've written, there was just a young lady here at your booth who loved it from Zadi.
Yep.
My brother used to buy me those when I was little and get me to read more.
Okay.
And you wrote a lot of Q novels with
I
Q.
I did.
Is that just a favorite character of yours, or how did the happenstance that you wrote, I think, four different Q novels?
We're going to pause right there. We're going to come back and get that answer from Peter David right after this, so stand by.
Ain't no monster clown who is as lovable
as ever loving Hulk. Hulk, Hulk.
Hi, this is John DeLancey, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to Geek to Me Radio. I'm your host, James Enstall. We're chatting with author Peter David, and before we went to break, we were chatting with him about how he ended up writing so many of his Star Trek novels were about the character of Q.
The idea for the book that eventually became Q-squared surfaced when I was watching Encounter at Farpoint. And Q showed up. And I'm watching Q and I'm going, I know this character. This is the Squire of Gothos. This is Trelane. You know, I mean, they since went on to do far more with him than they ever did with Trelane. But nevertheless, establishing a connection between Q and the Squire of Gothos seemed to me to be an absolute natural, which is where Q squared came from. And after they introduced Loxana Troi, I thought, you know, it would be great to have Loxana play off of Q. So I did. The idea of the concept of writing IQ came from... That wasn't my idea. A literary agent set up the deal with Simon & Schuster and then came to me because John DeLancey by that point knew who I was and John wanted to work with me on writing it. Since then, I had him show up in New Frontier because, you know, why the hell not?
Yeah.
I needed an all-powerful being. There was one that already existed in the Star Trek universe, so why not him?
And I think Q and Law, you mentioned that, probably one of the few books that I've read that I literally laughed out loud, and if that wasn't made into an episode of the television, I would have been...
Nigel Barrett tried to have exactly that happen. She read Q and Law, fell in love with it, and tried to convince Mike Piller to have it made into an episode. He would not do it, his reasoning being, the story's already been told in a book. And I'm sitting there going, right, because books have never been made into TV shows. Or movies.
Right.
What an absurd idea. Gone with the Wind. What a stupid concept. Wizard of Oz. You know, are you out of your freaking mind?
And talking about Star Trek, with being a fan, as I can tell you are, when you go in with ideas, do they ever come back and say, well, you can't do this, you can't do this, do you have to pay strict attention to canon? How is the leeway
with
writing novels?
Actually, Q and Law, for instance, Simon & Schuster approached me. They wanted me to write a a giant Star Trek novel about the Borg. Now, I had wanted to write Q'enlore, the book that would become Q'enlore, and they had not expressed interest in it. Hmm. So I said to them, tell you what, we'll do a two-book deal. I will write you your great big book of Borg, but then I want to write Q'enlore. And they went, okay, if it means that much to you. So, because they had no idea that L'Oxana and Q as characters were going to take off the way that they did.
Sure.
And I wrote Vendetta, and then I wrote Q'enlore. Now, there's a story attached to this. There was a guy at the time, who shall go nameless, Richard Arnold, who was in charge of approving books. And normally, when they would send a manuscript, they would hear back within 2 weeks. They sent in the book Q'enlore, the manuscript. A month goes past. 2 months go past. They're not hearing from Richard. They're going, Richard, what's the story with Q'enlore? No answer. He's totally stonewalling them. We flash forward now to February. I'm at a Creation Con, which I know Richard is at too. They had me up on stage to do a reading. I decided to do a reading from Q'enlore. I went over with, I read the beginnings of the scene where Q and L'Oxana are beating the crap out of each other. It went over huge. The audience loved it. And I read it knowing that Richard was standing in the back of the room watching the audience reaction to this. On Monday, we get a fax. This is before emails. An angry letter from Richard that says authors are no longer allowed to do readings of non-approved novels at conventions. They cannot do it.
Hmm.
Furthermore, Q'enlore, as of this point, is not approved. This book is an insult to Star Trek. The editor says, how is it an insult to Star Trek? What do you want changed? No answer. Richard goes dead silent. Now it's May. The book is supposed to come out in September. If we don't get it approved, we're not going to be able to make shipping. We have a cover for it. Major Barrett is going to be attending a convention near me called Icon. I said to my editor, send me a clean copy of the manuscript and a cover proof. I'm going to give it to Major Barrett and ask for her input. It's not unprecedented. I had done that with Marina on one of my Trek novels, Rock and a Hard Place.
Okay.
I said, I'm not going to mention her that Richard's stonewalling it. I don't want to put her in a bizarre situation. But I will tell her that I'd like her input on how I handle L'Oxana. And he says, you realize that if she hates it, we're dead. I said, we're dead anyway.
Yeah.
We have absolutely nothing to lose. So he sends me a clean copy of the manuscript. On Friday, she's at her table. I come in, I introduce myself. I tell her exactly that. I'm saying, here's a copy of this book called Q'enlore. I would like you to read it and give me your thoughts on it. And she looks at it, and she looks at the cover, and she says, I'm on the cover. I went, yes, you are. She says, I haven't been on the cover of a Star Trek novel since 1993. I said, well, you'll be on the cover of this one. She says, I will read it on the flight home. I said, fantastic. She not only keeps her word, but on Monday morning, she comes breezing into the Star Trek offices telling everybody about this wonderful new Star Trek novel called Q'enlore. And oh my God, it's fantastic, and we should really do it as an episode, and it's terrific. And she's telling anyone who has a pulse. Now understand that we had spies in the Star Trek offices. So we hear that Majel goes into Richard Arnold's office and says, Richard, have you read this wonderful new Star Trek novel called Q'enlore? And Richard, who had been stonewalling this book for 6 months and called it an insult to Star Trek, said, why no? I haven't read it yet, Major, but I'll get right on it. And she says, well, you should, because it's really terrific. So then she calls me and raves to me about the book, and she's going over all the stuff she loves. We then get a 5-page letter from Richard Arnold with all the stuff he wants changed. Nope. Because about 90% of stuff he wanted, I'm going, you want me to take out the line where Worf says sell tickets? Oh, no, no, no. That was Majel's favorite line. Oh, you don't like this part? No, Majel loved that part. I made like 10% of the changes that were no consequence to me whatsoever. He hated, for example, that Loxana turns him into a tree and comes at him with a buzzsaw. He said, no, they don't have buzzsaws in Star Trek's time. So I changed that to an axe. I didn't care. But when we did the audio version of it, Richard was out by that time. So in the audio version, it's a buzzsaw. Yeah. So that was how Q and Law wound up seeing print, which was then so popular as a book that Simon Schuster turned it into an audio version. Oh, and this gets better. They want to have both John Delancey and Majel Barrett do the reading. We then get contacted by Simon & Schuster, by Paramount, after we come out with it. And Paramount says, you can't send this out. It's beyond the limit of your license. You can only release books that are read by a single actor. This is the book in which you've got two actors interacting in character. This is no longer a book reading. It's a dramatization. You can't release it. And Simon & Schuster says, okay, fair enough. We will just re-record it with John Delancey, and you can explain to Gene Roddenberry's widow why she was dropped off the audio. And Paramount comes back and says, okay, you know what? Just don't do it again. And so, basically, sometimes I would come with them. I want to write a Captain Sulu novel.
And we're going to take our next break, come back and wrap things up, getting that story from Peter David. Stand by.
Hi, this is Gates McFadden. Now, don't tell my space son, but I always listen to Geek to Me Radio. Do it.
And we're back. Want to make sure to tell you about our other show sponsor, MarcusTheaters.com. If you're like me, and we talked about COVID earlier in the show, you're missing movies. This has a lot of things shut down, a lot of things ground to a halt. Movie theaters are something I miss. It is an experience for me. I go to the movies, I get the popcorn, I get the soda, I get the snow caps like I have since I was a kid, and I enjoy sitting in the movie and having that electricity from the crowd that's there in that theater when something happens and everyone laughs. Or like, for example, I'll never forget Avengers Endgame when, you know, the hammer flies into Cap's hand and you realize he's got the hammer. The scream that went out through the theater, everyone was cheering. That's an experience you cannot truly recreate at home, no matter how many friends you pack onto your couch. The movie theater experience is sacrosanct, and I know Marcus Theaters is more excited than anybody for things to start opening up and for things to start getting back to normal. MarcusTheaters.com is doing the best to keep you occupied until that time. They've got their movie bundle. You can have movie popcorn, huge, huge bag of movie popcorn, movie-sized theater candy, other items shipped straight to your house so you can try to recreate that movie experience at home. They've got interactive games on the website. You can print off coloring pages for the kids. I know the school's maybe not opening, or to keep the kids occupied and give them something else to do and challenge them with. All sorts of fun things. Marcus has thought of it all. They've got, in certain theaters, they're doing their parking lot drive-in, so they're putting up a big screen on the sides of the theaters, and they're showing movies up on the wall. So if you get a chance, check out the website, MarcusTheaters.com, and if you can find one of those events close to you, go to it. That's a great way to still experience the movies with people while social distancing and staying safe. I know we've been in talks with the people who run Marcus Theaters, and they said they're taking every precaution looking ahead to see what they can do. Social distancing, extra measures for cleaning of the theater, so when they do open back up, it will be safe. It'll be sound for everybody to go, and wear your masks, people. That's all I can say is wear the masks. MarcusTheaters.com for more information. Marcus Theaters, love, love, love this company. We hope you will too. They're taking our last break here, and we were talking right before we went to break about Peter David and how he got his chance to write a Captain Sulu novel.
Kevin Ryan, the editor at the time, was not the slightest bit interested in Captain Sulu.
Hmm.
Was not at all interested. Now, this requires a bit of a backstory. George Takei is a friend of mine. I went out to visit him when he was shooting Star Trek VI. He asked me to run lines with him, which is no great honor. Actors, I ask anyone who can read to
right.
run lines with him. And I was reading the line where he said, "This is Captain Sulu." And I said, "Hey, George, you know, Paramount, in general, and Richard Arnold in particular, has always said that the first name that he was given in the novels of Hikaru is not canonical because it's never been mentioned on TV or on the movies. When Kirk would introduce himself, he would say, I'm Captain James Kirk. It would make sense for Sulu to give his first name when he's identifying himself. If you say, this is Captain Hikaru Sulu, his name will become canonical. He said, let's go ask Nick. Nick Meyer.
Okay.
He brings me over to Nick Meyer, who's sitting there, and he says, Nick, this is Peter David. He's a friend of mine, and he would like to make a suggestion. And I ran it past him, and Nick goes, Hikaru Sulu. Hikaru Sulu. Captain Hikaru Sulu. Yeah, I like that. Okay, use it. Now, they wound up cutting that line. However, now that he had the go-ahead from Nick, George Takei took it upon himself to introduce it everywhere he could. Flash forward 6 to 8 months to the licensee screening of Star Trek VI. And the first line is something like, Captain's Log, Stardate 2325.7, Captain Hikaru Sulu recording. There was a crew of people from pocketbooks there. And when he said, Captain Hikaru Sulu recording, the place went nuts. Absolutely nuts. Because by Paramount's own rules, his first name of Hikaru was now canonical. They could never unring that bell. And after the screening, Kevin Ryan comes over to me and says, so, Peter, Captain Sulu novel, when can you start writing it?
There you go.
Yeah, so I would come up with ideas. Simon & Schuster would shoot them down, but then eventually come around to my way of thinking. And actually, George wound up outing me at my bowling alley. But I bowl in a league in my neighborhood. And they had no idea who I was because, you know, my attitude is, I'm not going to say, hi, I'm Peter David, New York Times bestselling author. You know, no, I'm there to bowl, you know? And one day...
Oh, perfect.
And one day... I come in, and a couple guys come running up to me, and they go, do you write Star Trek novels? I went, yes. They say, do you know George Takei? I went, they actually said, do you know George Takei? I said, Takei, and yes. They said, did you write a Star Trek novel with Captain Sulu? I went, yes. And they went, oh, my God. And I said, how did you guys know this? It turns out that George had been on Howard Stern that day. And Howard had asked him if George liked any of the Star Trek novels. And George said, well, there's this one novel that I love called The Captain's Daughter, written by my good friend Peter David, that focuses on Captain Sulu's daughter, who was introduced in Star Trek...
The last one, yeah.
Generations. And apparently, everyone in my damn bowling alley listens to Howard Stern because throughout the evening, people kept coming over and asking me if I was that same Peter David.
And you're still working. You're continuously working. Yep. You mentioned you're working on a new limited symbiote Spidey. What else have you got coming out this in for 2020?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
I mean, I have stuff that has not been announced yet.
Gotcha, okay.
So I have to kind of defer to when they want to announce stuff. But let's just say that I've got some dramatic projects
that are
coming forward.
All right. And where can people find you online? Are you active on Twitter, Instagram?
I'm on Twitter. I've never touched Instagram. I'm on Facebook. And I have my own website, peterdavid.net. Olo.com, but... It started out as .net because peterdavid.com was a cloisonné pin manufacturer.
Oh.
Who then went out of business, so now I have .com as well.
You have them both. Perfect. Peter David, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Happy to be here.
That's going to do it. Another show in the books. Thanks once again to authors Julie Murphy and Peter David for being guests on the show. If you have a guest who you think might be a good fit, you can always email me, James@geektomeradio, and in the subject line, put in all capital letters, guest. Please make sure you're following me on Twitter and on Instagram at Geek to Me Radio. Check us out on YouTube. Just look for Geek to Me Radio. Subscribe there. These shows go up there. You can listen quietly on your laptop and minimize the screen so you're hearing it while you're doing your other work. Thanks again to Joey V. This guy is doing all the work putting all these shows together for me, and I wouldn't still be here if not for him. So thank you to Joey V. And thank you all for listening. Until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I sound be. It's not
Thank you, Kobayashi Maru. Good night.
Hi, this is James Enstall, host of Geek to Me Radio, and in honor of my favorite Themyscirian, I've decided to become an Amazon warrior.
Hera, give me strength.
The next time you want to buy something from Amazon, go to geektomeradio.com first and click on our Amazon affiliate link. Simply shop like you normally would, and when you check out, a small percentage will go towards supporting the show. So remember, the next time you want to search Amazon for the latest Wonder Woman graphic novel or parts for your invisible jet, click through from geektomeradio.com first.
The world was in peril. Would you have me stand by and do nothing?